NRP S2E40 3D scanning. Hey everybody, welcome back, and I'm your host, Ben.
Yeah, I'm your co-host, Ian, here.
Hey everybody. So, this week we're going to be talking about one of Ian's projects that he likes. You know, he's been researching and, you know, getting excited about is 3D scanning. So, why don't you tell us a little bit about your, history with the whole thing of the 3D scanning and whatnot, Ian?
Well, I mean, I really don't have a history per se of it yet. I mean, I plan on sort of making my own DIY scanner, probably one that's like a multi-angle camera scanner, I guess. It's going to be like a rig where you'll be able to rotate the camera around the object that you're trying to scan. So that'll be a project in itself. And before long, it'll probably turn into sort of an expensive project, you know.
Yeah, expanding and you think, oh, this will be a little weekend, job I got to do. Next 6 months later, it's like, this was going to be a weekend job. So,
yeah.
So, when did you get first, decide that you're going to try and build your own scanner? Because I know, it's one of those things I've heard talk about ever since they've been talking about, 3D printers have, obviously come up. And so, obviously, 3D scanning has slowly been getting more popular, and there's been more people writing about it and building things and making how-tos. So when did you get into it?
Well, I don't know. Probably about a couple of months or so ago. I was thinking about doing it so I can maybe try to make some sculptures and stuff, because I'm sort of decent with sculptures, working with clay and stuff like that. And I haven't worked with it for a while, so I'm probably a little bit rusty. But I figured that I could get a 3D scanner to try to scan in my sculptures and then, edit them or whatever on the computer. So it's sort of be like I was like 3D modeling with my fingers like in real life, Hopefully they'll have a Cintiq equivalent to that sometime in the future,
Well, isn't that what some places do where they have, when they decide to make a 3D film and stuff, they have modelers make actual maquettes and then they scan them in segment by segment into the computers and work the models from there?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I don't know too much about that, but, I'll probably research it myself a little bit more. But from what I've heard, it's good to use clays that aren't that shiny or whatever, so it's more of a matte finish on the clay.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, that's mainly the purpose that I wanted to get the scanner for. And I just thought that the whole idea of being able to get a block of clay, sculpt something out of it, scan it in, and then that information is there on the computer. Even if you destroy the clay or whatever, it's still in there in some form. And some could argue that that object is pretty much immortal now. As long as you have a computer running, or if you have it on the cloud or whatever, it's always going to be there somehow,
Awesome. So the kind of rig you're going to make, is it going to be something that the more you put into it, you can expand it and make it bigger? Or are you just going to make like it's going to be like a box that's a certain size? Is that, how are you going to go about that?
Yeah, I mean, I might have something where you can, have a little track on the camera, because you could buy little macro sliders that are meant to zoom in and out, mm-hmm. in a small increment. So if you're doing macro photography of a flower or insect or something, you can do a slight adjustment to actually move in and out, But, I mean, the most that I probably figured that I'm going to make a sculpture is the size, at least, is probably just going to be a stuffed teddy bear or, something a little bit bigger than a basketball, I mean, I figured I'll probably make 12-inch maquettes or something on it,
Well, I mean, you could always do a segmented sculpture, too, and just, do a head and then, a piece
of
head.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's sort of my inspiration for wanting to do it, But they have these rotators that you could get, so you can specify the increments as far as the angle goes, and you can rotate. You'll be able to rotate whatever arm I decide to put this thing on, so many degrees, usually for scanning in an object, usually you want to have, like, if you're going to do it with a camera, you want to have, like, 16 pictures going around. So, and then that's, like, around the center, and then do, like, 16 more on another level, like, above it, like, 45 degrees pointing down towards it, and then 45 degrees pointing up from the bottom of it, you know? So you're pretty much going to have, like, a whole grid of cameras of pictures around the object that you'll have taken. You could almost do, like, they have, what are those called, those QuickTime VRs, like those object VRs where you can rotate the object in the QuickTime or Flash or whatever.
Yeah, I've seen a few of those. I don't know if people use them anymore, but, like, when I used them, they were always for, like, touring a building or from, like, a photo. Sometimes you'd have the object, but, you know, it was usually for a lot of zooming in and going this way and going that.
Right. And from what I've researched, it's important, like, if you're going to go the scanning from where you take a whole bunch of photos of the object and then you put it in the software and the software spits out a mesh from all those pictures, you want to be rotating around the object. You can't, like, at first I thought you could just rotate the object itself and have one fixed camera position and, like, mask out the background so it doesn't confuse it, but that'll actually produce some inaccurate results. So you want to be actually having the camera rotate around your object. So, and I know it's sort of a pain in the butt. I was like, damn.
It's like, I've got to build this in. I can't just have a lazy Susan with a, you know, being a turntable kind of thing.
Yeah. Sucks. But yeah, that's the, if you're going to go that method of scanning, you have to do that. And I mean, like, I'm going to explain a couple different methods. I mean, that's not the only method you could go. As far as 3D scanning goes, it just depends on your time requirements as far as if you're going to make a scanner or if you're really tight on time but you're not tight on money. You could go for the more expensive route with the 3D scanners and go into the thousands of dollars, you know.
So, like, are you getting, like, you described you're going to get, like, a rig for the camera on a track, you know, for on a track or whatever, but, like,
right,
you know, obviously, to make the mesh and everything, is that, like, all, you know, is there, like, an open source kind of software for that, or are you going to have to compile something? What are you doing with that?
Well, they do have software where you can just dump all your photos into the software, and, you know, you specify the, you know, like, your camera parameters. Some software can automatically get the parameters from the camera, like the focal length and aperture and stuff like that, and it'll actually generate a mesh from those pictures. One program I was thinking about using was a program called Autodesk 123D Catch. And then there was another program called Agisoft Photo Modeler Scanner, I think. Yeah, it was Agisoft Photo Scan. That's what it was called. But yeah, I mean, theoretically, you don't even need to build a rig. You could just try to be really careful and go take 16 pictures as evenly as you can around the object handheld. But I figured with making my own rig, it'll be a lot more precise and it'll be consistent throughout all the models that I scan in, you know.
It'll be less headache for procedurally too. So yeah, it'd pay for itself in headache at least.
yeah, because I saw a video of a guy scanning in a shoe, and then he had to do like one of those time lapse where he's running around the shoe at all these different angles. You know?
And you hear Yakety Sax playing the whole time, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, is that just like, you know, like just straight up taking a picture of it, or is there something, you know, to indicate the depth in the image, like any kind of dots on a, you know, screen? Because, like, you know, when they do the mocap stuff, you always see the actors with those dots on their faces, or, like, you know, or the camera might have, like, a laser pointer doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, well, that's dependent on the software. I'm not too sure about the 123D Catch program, but as far as I know, as long as you give the parameters of your focal length or whatever other parameters it needs, you shouldn't need any dots. You just dump the files in there and it'll produce a mesh. It'll calculate for a little bit and then it'll tell you it's done and you'll have your mesh. Some programs might need some kind of, what you're talking about, a calibration chart, which is like a, you could print out like a thing on foam board or something and it'll have a bunch of dots and you could calibrate it from that. But the main thing is for a lot of 3D scanning programs that build a mesh from the photos, is you want to keep your focal length the same. So that means no zooming in or out accidentally when you're taking all the pictures, you know, because then it'll get confused then.
How many cameras were you planning on setting up in this kind of rig, man?
Oh, well, since money is a factor with me, I'm probably just going to be using one. So like I said, the camera would just rotate around the object with this rig. I mean, people set up multi-camera rigs so that the you don't even need to build an arm that rotates around the object. You just build like a whole grid of cameras around the object.
And then just sit it in and snap a photo and it snaps all of them at once. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then with that, you have to set up some kind of rig with a timer that releases all the shutters and stuff. It sort of gets kind of crazy, and those can get to be in the thousands of dollars too, just from the cameras. And it's like, you might as well just buy a really expensive laser scanner then, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, with those kind of rigs though, it'd be very easy to do one of those, you know, like they do it in music videos and stuff, where you get the still shot and the camera just all go around the thing and it's all taken at the same time.
Yeah. But yeah, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. I figure I'll go through the lists here and explain the differences of the different methods. First, you can get like a mechanical contact probe scanner, which those are like the older type scanners. I think they had a couple at the Art Institute, but one is like a carriage. It has like a carriage frame where it has like rails or whatever, where it gently feels the surface with like a point. It's like a pen, and it'll go along the tracks and it'll scan the object from the top. Or you could get those little probe scanners that are on an arm. They even have ones that you could just like trace over the object with a pen, but it's an older thing. I mean, I wouldn't want to have to use it because it'd be like trying to color in a whole sculpture with a marker. I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with the camera, it's all just a quick visual, and you know, it only takes as long as it takes to take a photo versus literally going over the entire thing. I've seen old, you know, document scanners the same way, that they're like one of those handheld scanners that you get at the checkout of, you know, at a grocery store or something. You got to hold it over and go over the whole thing manually versus putting something in like a document feeder and just let it go.
Right. So. But I mean, as far as the pros and cons of that, I mean, the pros are it's like really accurate and it has like a higher resolution with the mesh. And obviously the con would be it's very slow and tedious. And also you could damage the object if you're doing like a wet sculpture, or if you're doing an order like something from the museum or something, if it's like a mummy or something that could disintegrate as soon as you touch it, you know?
Yeah, that's why you can't, you know, that's designed more for like maquettes and like solid objects, as opposed to things that like, if you touch it, it's going to change the shape of the object. That'd be weird.
Yeah, exactly. So it's meant for smaller objects like toys or figurines, you know. You don't want to be trying to trace over like a building with this, you know.
Well, I wouldn't. Somebody might.
Hey, somebody might. Yeah. And then the next is obviously the laser scanning. One of a good laser scanner that you could buy that's a professional one, and it's pretty popular. It's called the Next Engine. It's like $2,000, which for a professional system, that's like probably the cheapest that you could get. There's an Arctic portable scanner, which is sort of like it's like a handheld camera sort of that has like one of those pistol grips on the bottom of it, and it has like a laser beam that's in you know, it's red, and you shine it over the surface of your objects and it'll start continuously generating a mesh from that, you know. And you could also build yourself like a DIY laser scanning rig that you could use like a laser level. You could put that on like some kind of mechanical servo or something that slowly passes over your object, and you could have it rotate and then go the other way, and you could have it hooked up to your computer and it'll scan in your object that way. You just want to make sure you have some kind of laser that's like a line. If you could even use like a laser pointer and point it through the stem of like a wine glass, so it flattens out the dot to like a line. The software you could use for that is called David Laser Scanner, and you could have it in real time start generating the mesh from whatever you point the the laser line on and it'll start generating it. Or you can like put in like a video file of you slowly having the laser go over the object and it'll generate the mesh from that. It doesn't have to be, you know, like real time or whatever. But that kind of thing with the David laser scanner, you do need some kind of calibration grid with like dots and like some kind of checkerboard pattern or something over that, so the software recognizes the focal length and the field of view and stuff like that. So that type of stuff is pretty interesting. I mean, I probably could do the same kind of a similar rig with that and probably for the same price to do something like that. But I just figured that using like a camera and just taking different pictures, I thought that would be probably easier, you know?
Yeah, definitely like less of an investment to get new equipment, and then you can always take the camera and do other stuff with it.
Yeah, and it's pretty accurate, and as that also it also has a high resolution. But the I guess you could say the cons of laser scanning is that it's also a little bit slow, and you can't have your object really move that much, you know, while it's scanning. I mean, obviously you don't want to mess up your mesh as it's generating, you know. The other downside of that too is that you have to do multiple scans, because if you have the laser scanner go over, like if you're scanning in your face, well, you want the whole head, you're going to have to scan the face part and then like the sides and then stitch them all together in your 3D program. And that's sort of tedious, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, I figure with any of these scanning programs, it's like, whenever it makes the mesh, you're probably still going to want to check over it after it's done, you know, and you don't want to just scan and go, okay, that's fine, and never tweak and make sure, oh, wait, this thing lined up, you want to make sure everything's perfect.
Yeah, there's probably going to be some post-production on the model a little bit, you know.
Plus, you know, it's always counting polygons, you want to try and get as few as you can, you know.
Yeah, well, the downside to a lot of these is that it tends to generate, like, spider webs of, like, triangles and stuff. It's not really that animatable, so a lot of times people will do what it's called retopologizing, where you build, like, another mesh right on top of it. And a lot of software, it makes it easy to do that nowadays, so there's not much effort in doing that. A lot of times it'll do it automatically for you, like, with a lot of new features of Mudbox and ZBrush.
Mm-hmm.
But the only other downside with laser scanning I'm pretty sure of is that you can't like get the color information from it usually, so you can't have like a diffuse texture with it. It's just you're just using it to get the 3D information from it, you know.
That's fine. I mean most things you might want to make your own, you know, texture for it. Like, you know, you might model it in some crappy clay and then want to, you know, do something with it, make it like gold or something in the computer, you know.
Yeah, and this usually it's meant for, you know, like smaller to medium-sized objects like toys, figurines, dolls, or faces. And then next up on the list here is something called structured light scanning, which it uses the way the mesh is generated is by using different patterns of light. And so the way a lot of game studios will use this is by to scan in faces is they'll project like a pattern of like straight lines onto the face. So the software, it'll see like the distortions in the flow of the edges. It'll know how to calculate the mesh and the depth from that. And you can make your own DIY scanning rig with that too by using like some old projectors or some cheap projectors and a camera. But you also need like you need to stitch those together also, just like the laser scanning, because you can only project from one side with one camera, I believe. And the Kinect uses that also. We've talked a little bit before about using the Kinect as a DIY scanner or a cheaper scanner. And what it pretty much does is it has like, I believe it has two or three cameras in it or something. I know it's at least two, but one is like an infrared camera. Mm-hmm. And it'll project some kind of grid of dots in the infrared spectrum where the regular color camera, it doesn't pick up those dots, but in the infrared, it sees all the dots all over the scene. In the links, I should have probably found a link to a picture of that so you could sort of see what the Kinect does. But the software is the same as the patterns, because it picks up the patterns and it knows how to generate the mesh from that. So with the Kinect, you can progressively scan an environment, so you can shine the Kinect on your, like, you could do like a whole bedroom or whatever and scan your whole bedroom in by waving the Kinect and pointing it in all the directions, and it'll start progressively generating your mesh, and eventually you'll probably get into the like millions of polygons, but it could do the job.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's probably more affordable than, like, you know, buying a laser scanner, which sounds pretty pricey.
Oh, yeah.
But then again, since it's a Kinect, you know, it's kind of a, you know, it's probably going to be less resolution, you know, lesser quality than some of the other methods.
Yeah, it is a little bit lesser quality. It's pretty accurate, but the resolution of the mesh is usually not as high as, like, you would get from, like, using the photos or the laser scanning. But I believe there was something that you could get, you could put on the Kinect, where it was, I think it was called Zoom for Kinect, and it'll, you can use that to zoom in, and you could get like a more denser mesh with that. You can't really bring the object up closer, because I guess it doesn't pick it up if you're too close. It's meant for to be scanning things that are more out in the middle of the room, you know.
Well, that's where people are supposed to be too, you know. It's meant for the users, not, you know, you're just hacking it for whatever your purpose is. But, yeah, do you know any, like, any of the changes in the Xbox One Kinect that they're supposed to roll out? Is it, you know, any improvements that you were looking forward to with that?
Well, obviously it's a higher resolution, both in the color and for the mesh generation. And I think you could do, like, finer, like, finger movements with the Kinect. And, yeah, obviously I forgot to mention that it is, you could use a Kinect for a mocap, obviously, you know. I mean,
I mean, that's what the Xbox uses it for.
Yeah. Other than that, I don't know all the other technical details of it. I know it can somehow read your heart rate by reading the, like, the variations of your skin tone somehow. I've heard something about that.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen people use the Kinect and Minecraft and using it to, like, you know, they take a photo with it, and then like they had a script that would generate, like, you know, structures, you know, from, like, the different blocks in the game, so, like, you could have a, you know, a model of a person. It was very blocky and chunky and everything, but still, it's like, that's just freaky to see.
Yeah.
Like, here's a picture of me and my cat. Whoa! A lot of grass blocks in there and a lot of dirt.
Right. But the nice thing about using structured light patterns to scan in your model is that you can scan in your mesh in real time, so you can actually have an animating mesh, so you could have, like, a character dancing, and you can, you know, with whatever software you use, you can get the mocap from that. But you can use multiple Kinects if you want, or if you're going the DIY route and you're using, like, projectors and cameras, you can get it from multiple views, so you can stitch all those together and you could get a fully animating mesh, which I think is pretty cool.
I think that could be, like, useful for, like, you know, experimental stuff where, like, you know, you could have, like, you know, two people together and it could, you know, and you could, you know, they could form one solid mesh in the scan, and then it could be, like, you know, going, you know, melding in and out of, you know, morphing stuff, and it could be, like, you know, animating that, you know. I can see a lot of potential with something like that.
Yeah. Well, I believe in some of the links that we'll put on the blog post here, it'll show you all the crazy things you could do with that type of technology. You can scan in whole environments. You can capture in real time. It's just crazy.
Well, I mean, it also depends on what you're wanting to do with it, because, like, if you're just wanting to do a render of just one, you know, like a portrait of something, or, like, you know, a room, and then try and make everything in it as realistic as you can, but not a photo. You're just trying to model it. And then you can put all kinds of crazy textures. Or, like, if you're trying to do, you know, like, a video game and you just want to make a character that looks exactly like you, you can take a, you know, model you with it.
Yeah. Well, that's a nice thing, too, is since the Kinect has, they call it an RGB camera, but it's just a regular video camera, you know. But you can capture the color texture with that, too, on the model. It's crazy. Pretty cool. But, yeah, I guess I'll get into next what's called photogrammetry, which we were talking about with the route that I'm going to go with my 3D scanning rig, which is pretty much just generating meshes from photos. Usually it's multi image, so it's multiple images. It's more than one or two usually. I mean, you can use two cameras to sort of generate a mesh, but it doesn't really generate that much. Usually, a lot of times people use just two cameras to use it for like textures, like bump maps or normal maps and stuff like that. And then you can do like what's called image-based modeling, which is you can do this in SketchUp, I believe. We'll give you some links in the blog to that. But you could do like where you try to match up in your viewport like a reference image, and you start trying to model from that. Like if you're trying to model building, you go point by point on each edges with, and the hopefully your perspective and your viewport matches the perspective in the image. But you could start using that picture as a reference to model from, and you could do what's just called reference modeling, which a lot of people do for like heads or bodies, where you'll either trace in like a picture of a person's head to start modeling like point by point, or like a drawing that you have just using it as like reference planes in this like in the side, bottom, and top viewports. Yeah, that's how a lot of people will model, like a lot of beginners, because it's good because you keep your proportions and stuff, you know,
and you got the reference to start from and everything.
Yeah, so there's tons of links that I'll give everyone here about photogrammetry. Yeah, it has like, it's very accurate. You can capture, you know, like the car texture with it also, just like you would with the Kinect. And the good thing is you don't need any special equipment for it. You technically all you need is a camera and then whatever software you want to use to generate the mesh. So
it sounds like it's got the best of both worlds, and it's like you can get your texturing information from it, and it's easier to set up, and you know, you can use the parts of the rigs and other stuff, which is useful.
Yeah, the main downside of that is that with that type of method you can get like a real-time model of it, so I don't think you could get like an animating mesh from it, unless if there's software that I don't know of that you can like use a bunch of video cameras and start capturing the mesh. I think there is some software, now that I'm actually saying it, that you can use to capture a mesh in real time and maybe even get some mocap data from it somehow. I'm not sure, but I mean, for scanning in 3D models, it's a good choice, I think, you know, for the people where money does matter, you know.
Well, the most bang for your buck with it.
Yeah. Another con to it, I guess, would be that it takes up like a lot of disk space, you know. You have to have a bunch of pictures for it. And I myself tend to try to keep as much as I can. Like I won't even after I use it to scan in the model, I probably won't delete the images, you know. I'll probably just keep them on a hard drive archive somewhere, you know.
Well, that way you can always use them for a reference for something. If if for some reason something gets corrupted or you lose the model, you've got perfect pictures of it.
Yeah. Another good thing about that too is you can use it on like any size object pretty much. You can take different views of like building whole buildings and stuff. Or you can even, if you're like in a helicopter, you can even somehow use the pictures to scan in mountains and stuff. The sky's the limit with that, I guess, technically.
Well, whatever you can afford to get, you know, depends on how big your camera is, how many cameras you can get going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, the next type of scanning that you can do is pretty similar, but this uses just like the lighting of your object to scan it in. It's called photometric stereo, where it uses multiple lighting conditions to calculate, you know, like the surface orientation and stuff like that. Not a whole lot of software out there that can do it, but there's a few. It's also known as shape from shading, form recognition, and mainly a lot of people use it for like texturing, like capturing the bump map from the image. I've done that on a couple things where you want like a really accurate bump map, and you can first you take like the color picture of it, and then you like put some different lights on it and light it from the sides. Obviously you want to have like your main light in the room, or you pretty much want to be in a dark room where you can only see like that one specific light from the side, so you can get different light sources and each light is isolated, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Some software, you can have the software just try to calculate like a a bump map or depth map from just from like a single image. One program that can sort of do that is called Crazy Bump. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of that program.
No, I don't think I have.
But it'll try its best to calculate like the height map or whatever from it. I mean, you can, this type of thing is, like I said, meant more for texturing, but some software, it can calculate a like a model or like a point cloud from it. And then obviously from every angle that you have of those different lighting conditions, you would have to stitch those together, you know, because you would just like with the laser scanning or the light projection, you would have to scan in each side, or you could have like multiple viewpoints, I guess. But pretty much what I do for my lighting setup, there's a tutorial that we'll put in the blog also. That's one of the links on there where you light your subject. Like if you have like, if you're doing like a texture of like a bunch of rocks or something, you could light that area that your camera is like pointing down towards. And usually I use like a decent tripod to have the camera pointing towards the ground. You have it somehow set up to do that. And you have like a light source pointing at the top, and then you take a picture of it, and then move your light source to the left, take a picture, and then you just go in all four directions. And so you would end up with four pictures. And there's like a certain workflow you can do in like Photoshop and do different blending modes and stuff like that. And you could get a normal map from it, and you could convert that into like a bump map. So, I mean, there's different ways of going about it. It's pretty interesting. If you look through the links, you'll see what I'm talking about. But there's the next field is, it sort of relates still to 3D scanning, I guess you could say, sort of. There's this thing called light fields where it captures like the angle of light, and there's like a type of camera that's sort of popular with that. It's called the Lytro. And what's cool about it is it captures the height information. It's embedded in their proprietary image format. So what's cool about that is you can do like a depth of field, so you can actually focus your image in like a certain part. Like you like click on a certain pixel or whatever in the image, and you could tell it to focus to that point. So it's, you know, even if your picture is out of focus, you can have it refocus magically at that point. So you know how you see a lot of pictures where you like, you see a close-up of a flower and the background is all blurred and stuff?
Depth of field, yep.
Yeah, the depth of field, you can choose your depth of field after you've taken the picture, because it technically captures the whole image like really sharp, but
And then using the depth, which is,
with the depth map, you can choose whatever point you want and then focus if using that.
It's a nice non-destructive way to take an image.
Yeah, and I sort of thought that it would be interesting to fit that in there, because it relates to depth and 3D models. Because, I mean, theoretically, I guess if you had a software that could extract that depth from the image, you could construct the 3D model from that, you know?
And then you can, like, render out every scene and then, export out, I mean, decide on the depth of everything as you're rendering it.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
The main downside to, at least with the Lytro camera, is that it's sort of a low resolution. I don't know how many, I think it's only, like, 4 or 5 megapixels. If you click on the link, you'll see that it's, like, a little box camera. It's more of, like, a novelty-type camera for now.
For now, but I mean, a lot of things were novelty when they first got introduced, man. I mean,
yeah. Remember? I think there are other cameras that use light fields that are more expensive, you could use more professionally, but I don't think they're really that mainstream right now.
I mean, I remember when iPhone photography was a novelty.
Yeah.
And then you get reports of, like, the Chicago Sun-Times firing their entire photo department and saying, well, all the reporters can take photos with their iPhones. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
What an age we live in.
Yep. I mean, for a lot of people, the holy grail, I think, of like texturing and stuff like that, and like a lot of, even in compositing and film too, is if you could have a camera or even a video camera that could, at the same time of recording the color information, if it could record the depth information, and it could record it in like an alpha channel or like a separate file instead of having a proprietary format, you know? And I think it would just be interesting to see what a picture would look like with the depth in it, you know, from real life.
I've seen something like that where they were, I don't know if it was like Adobe was doing it, where they were showing a camera recording like depth information, but it was like this, the thing was all gray, and it was like, you know, varying shades of gray showing the depth of the image and stuff. I've seen reports on this kind of thing.
Yeah, usually the depth map says black means farther away, and then white means it's getting closer to you. I think I know what you're talking about. Isn't that thing where it's like a lens? It looks like the eye of like some kind of bug or something, because it has like multiple lenses inside of one giant lens.
Could be like that. I remember they were showing off the software to edit it. So they're like, at any point we've recorded this, so we can digitally like, you know, move around it and adjust where how. You know, what depth the camera is seeing, because the camera is only seeing what we're telling it to see, you know?
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, the only other type of 3D scanning that I can think of, which is probably the last one we'll probably talk about here, is just real briefly, is, you know, like the volumetric 3D scanning, which is pretty much, you only see that in the medical field with, you know, doing CT scans, MRI scans, ultrasound. And you can capture that in real time too, depending on, I think that's, you can only capture real time with the ultrasound, I think, where you can, you know, you're pregnant and you have a baby or something, and you can see the baby moving around in 3D, you know?
Hey, now, man, you're forgetting the most important kind of scanning, and that's the butt scan, when you're sitting on top of the copy machine, and it goes zoom, and then you move a little bit, and it zooms your moving of the butt, and then it looks like your butt's doing a little dance.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's high tech, man. The butt dance. So.
But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you can go about getting, you know, a mesh from real life. It's definitely an interesting field, and hopefully it'll be a learning experience for myself, you know.
Well, I look forward, you know, we look forward to seeing examples of what you've set up and, you know, what you put together, what, you know, what scans you get from it. And I'm looking forward to later when we do the 3D printing episode, where are you gonna be experimenting with a 3D printer down the line?
Well, I don't know if I'll buy one, but I'm thinking about going online and trying to get a couple things that I made models of for my camera lenses, like some kind of filter adapters and stuff like that. I was gonna go online and go to a website like Shapeways, and because you can upload a model and see how much it'll cost in that particular material, and I was going to see, you know, if their 3D printing is pretty decent, so I'll definitely be doing some test runs with them, you know.
Yeah, nothing wrong with, you know, I mean, you could just make a little tiny one just to see how the quality of it is, you know.
Yeah.
So.
And the nice thing about doing that, too, is that they offer a lot wider variety of materials that you can get with just some of the newer printers that are meant for, you know, the home. You can get, like, metal or rubber prints or, like, some kind of composite print. So it'll definitely be interesting. I'm pretty excited just about the whole 3D and printing and scanning world.
Well, I mean, at some point when you finish, you know, when you finish getting your scanner going, you know, you can show us some models that you have, and you're like right up on, okay, so I was totally wrong on this thing, or, oh yeah, I was totally right, man, this is great, or, you know, they came out with this new thing that's a lot better and cheaper than what I was doing. Because that always happens to me, man. It's like, you spend a lot of money on a project, and that's when they announce the newer version that does everything you want, plus this other thing, for only, you know, $5 more. It's like, oh, no.
Yeah, but...
Oh, man.
What'll be crazy, though, is I might have to actually send my model off a bunch of times to have it printed off, because, you know, my measurements, even though I was really precise in the program, in real life, things most of the time just doesn't fit, you know? It's a lot of trial and error, and unfortunately money, too.
Yeah, but I mean, it's all the learning experience for you, man, you know? And it's like I said on that episode where we were discussing education, man. It's like, you know, you spend a lot of time working on a project, even if you spend, like, you know, a couple grand, you know, still versus going to a school, paying tuition, having to pay lab fees.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's worth it in the long run, as long as you don't go bankrupt doing it.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, you don't have to worry about going bankrupt with a lot of the new printers that are coming out for the home. I mean,
we're going to have a whole episode about that, because I think that's an episode with potential. There's a lot of, you know, like, stuff. If we have an episode this year, I'm sure next year there'll be all kinds of stuff we could add to it, so.
Yeah, well, the 3D printing, what we meant to do.
3D printing. No, this is really how you do it. And then, no, this is the authoritative guy. No, see, this is the real shiznit. So, anyway.
Yeah.
So, but
I plan on mainly doing, like, an overview of the materials and some of the stuff we were talking about, because I'm definitely not an expert in either the 3D printing or 3D scanning. It's just what I've researched and what I've seen.
Yeah,
and
I
mean, hopefully it'll work out in the end.
You just tell us what you're excited about, what you're researching, and then you can report back on your findings of, man, this was a lot harder. Oh, man, I can't believe how easy it was, you know? So we're all looking forward to that in future episodes. But yeah.
Is there anything else that you would like to add to that? I mean, I know you're looking forward to a day when we can have the replicator from Star Trek, you know?
Well, no, I'm looking forward to the holodeck, you know, because that way I'll replicate, I mean, I'll be on the holodeck, and I'll have my own copy machine, and then I'll sit my butt down on it, and then we'll have the butt scanner, and it'll be great, man. That's the future. So, I think that about wraps it up this episode, don't you think, Ian?
Yeah, I think so. Hopefully, you'll be able to take something away from this episode.
I think it was very informative. I mean, you've looked over all, I'm looking over the notes, you got all the things. I mean, I think the only thing we didn't go over is the uses of 3D scanning, but I mean, I think you gradually drifted that in. You got the medical, cultural, and historical heritage stuff for, like, archiving museums, forensic for, you know, the CSI when they scan everything to get all the evidence without disturbing it, and scientific research, industrial when you're making machines and making all kinds of precise parts, and, of course, entertainment arts when you make, you know, Lord of the Rings, you've got to make Gollum.
Well, yeah, I mean, just like the episode that we did previously with the texturing, I mean, there's a whole wide range of stuff that you can use 3D scanning for. I mean, there's a whole gamut of industries, so it's not just the entertainment area.
Well, I mean, you know, just like with iPhones and stuff, man, it's one of those things, it came out, and now everybody has one, and you can use it for all kinds of things. You know, it's just a technology that can be used by, you know, mankind to better itself and to make things easier on our lives. So.
Yep. It's an exciting future.
Yes, and the future is where we're all going to live in the future. I think that's how Criswell said it, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's it for this week, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all on the other side.
Thanks for listening. Peace.
More, visit NoRightsProductions.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/NoRights. And hey, why don't you check out my Tumblr at NoRights.tumblr.com.